The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
And it's Monday morning. That means it's time for another edition of Kip Kiefer and Need to Know. Welcome in, everybody, on the TKR Network. We are delighted to have you today, as always. Appreciate our listeners and the good feedback we get. Today, we're going to talk about some modern-day TV, some old-timey TV, and some perspective episodes for this particular series that I don't think you will ever see, but I thought it would be a fascinating topic and very topical for this period in time. The entity I'm talking about is the FBI. The FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, thought it would be a good thing today to talk about the FBI and tell you some things you need to know. The FBI right now has a series of shows on CBS. It's not the FBI itself. It's dramatic depictions of FBI, supposedly some actual cases. They take a lot of artistic direction in this to make it more dramatic, more Hollywoodized. But there are three different FBI installments now, which are going to be a staple on the soon-to-debut new season for CBS television. And the three episodes categories and the completely different shows. You've got the FBI International, which is about FBI agents that are dispatched all over the world in getting involved in different cases. You have FBI Most Wanted, which are stories here domestically where some people that are doing really bad things are being pursued relentlessly by a group of FBI agents. And I don't think it's the recurring characters in these shows as much as it's different people's week to week. I haven't seen enough of the shows to really be able to tell you that, but it seems to me that that is kind of the way they're going. And the one that I think is legit and pretty interesting to watch is FBI True, which this is more of an hour-long documentary on an actual case with a retired agent talking to other agents that work those cases and getting the real inside baseball scoop on how they went about solving these things. They have footage. They have interviews. They go back and take you back to those times. I saw an episode recently where the FBI made this concentrated effort to take down the ultra corrupt FISA, which is the soccer, not FISA, I'm sorry. It's whatever the governing body for soccer was. FISA is the warrants I'm going to talk about later on. I get all my lettering confused here. But it was the international soccer sanctioning group with 12 different satellite organizations spread all across the globe, including the American version and the South American version, and how that had gotten so corrupt because the decision that committee makes every year, well, not every year, every couple of years on where the next World Cup is going to be is a multi-million, billion-dollar decision for the country that ends up hosting that event because it's so huge worldwide. And the FBI conducted a thorough investigation when they got intel that there were people that were making millions and millions of dollars basically on being bribed by nations that were aspiring to host the World Cup event. So, and there was another one last week on FBI True that followed the case of an abortion clinic bomber that they adamantly had to take off the street. And that one got me my attention. Look, I don't have any kind of inclination to sanction anyone to do misdeeds like that, destroy property, harm individuals. I mean, there were actual shootings of abortion doctors. That guy needed to be caught and taken off the street. But I find it interesting that the FBI is so focused on that side of the fence when there are women's clinics that are not that are pro-life and try to encourage women to have their children and maybe put them in adoption if they're not in the circumstance to care for them. I don't weigh in on the abortion situation. It's not something that is really pertinent for me to talk about. I'm not in that position. I don't deal with the unwanted pregnancy or the strife of making the decision whether to carry it on. I have my thoughts on it, but I'll keep those to myself. But it's interesting that they chose on an FBI True episode to dramatize that particular situation and never mention, of course, on the other side that you have the adamant pro-abortion folks, you know, staging similar attacks on the pro-life groups. So there's a lot to unwrap there, but the basic premise is the FBI True Show is very good because you're hearing from actual agents interviewed by a former agent who knows what she's talking about, and they look at different cases and different ways. The original World Trade Center bombing was recently featured. That was very interesting, and the perpetrator of that and how they tracked him down internationally. I think he was arrested in Tangiers or somewhere very exotic. The bottom line is FBI True, a legit show. I love documentaries and I love real history, and that show does a good job. But it harkens me back, and kind of the point of all this is I think back to my childhood, and from 1965 until 1974, for 9 years, a long running series, The FBI. And the music was dun 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 dun. I know that's a pathetic characterization of that. But basically, it was very dramatic. Came on with a shot of the J. Edgar Hoover building in Washington. It was starring Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. And I should have gone back and researched and seen what Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. did before playing for 9 years as Special Agent Louis Erskine on the original FBI series on ABC television. In those days, on Sunday nights, it was a real staple on American television. And the FBI, supposedly based on real cases, the show had the agents dramatically recreate exactly what happened in those. They changed the names to protect the innocent. And they also, of course, distorted the masterminds, the villains they were chasing a little bit to make them more interesting and even, in my opinion, more diabolical. But that show had a 9-year run, 241 episodes, very successful program, the original FBI. And it was actually sanctioned and screened and approved week to week for every episode by the associate director of the FBI. Tolson was his last name. He was J. Edgar Hoover's apprentice. Hoover was his mentor in the later parts of his life. Tolson was about 30 years younger and was the associate director. And they almost pulled the plug on the series after the very first episode, because it depicted a serial killer in the 1960s, which was a subject that no one was prepared for, who was strangling women, and how the FBI was able to finally piece together some clues and put that together. Of course, that was a little more difficult task in the 1950s when this allegedly happened, because you didn't have all of the access to all the technology today, DNA evidence. So many things were still out there. You had to do old-fashioned legwork as investigators and piece together the clues that you had, and they've managed to do that. But that episode was so shocking and so violent Even J. Edgar Hoover had called ABC and said, you need to pull that series. This is just not a good thing for the American public to see. And it really kind of introduces who J. Edgar Hoover was. And I know all of you have heard the name, and I know some of you probably have heard some of the things about the director. A lot of it these days is a fascination with the sordid angle of who J. Edgar Hoover may have been in his personal life. He was never married, never had a family, lived with his mother until she passed away in 1938. He was 43 at the time. Never strayed from Washington, was born basically in a house that is on what's now Capitol Hill with all the federal buildings. Grew up in Washington, went to high school, went to George Washington University in Washington, and joined the federal government at 21 years old in his first job, and quickly worked his way up the ladder. And President Calvin Coolidge at first gave him the assignment to be, they created a new agency, the BOI, Bureau of Investigation, that for about 12 years operated in Washington, with a 25-year-old to start with, Director J. Edgar Hoover. And when President Roosevelt authorized the creation of the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Hoover was the guy who was tabbed to be the original director, although he was still a very young man at the time, in 1935, just 40 years old. So the long and short of the story was, Hoover took over the FBI. He immediately started to craft it in his own image. And that image, as I mentioned, is rather controversial if you go back and read all the history. I don't think on FBI True, tonight on FBI True, we look at the original director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover. You're not going to see that episode because it doesn't feature a lot of flattering things. Now, as I mentioned, and this is the last time I'm going to mention it, there are a lot of sordid tales about how Hoover may have been into some interesting things in his personal life. None of that is substantiated, and none of it's really pertinent to this discussion. Who J. Edgar Hoover was the ultimate elitist. This was a guy who believed that he knew best and everybody else was, inconsequential in what they thought and what they believed. And I've had bosses like that. I know you've encountered people like that. They don't want to surround themselves with really accomplished, brilliant people. They want to be the one that everybody looks at as being the smartest guy in the room, the dominant alpha guy who is completely in charge, and it's his organization, and everybody else is just living in his world. That's kind of the personality of the original director, J. Edgar Hoover, who took over the FBI, the brand new organization, and that started in 1935. Now, here's some other things you'll never see in an FBI True episode or on the original series, FBI. Hoover, from his earliest days, had a little bit of a side gig where anybody that said anything negative or unflattering or questioned any of his decision making, Hoover immediately started digging into their lives and collecting an unbelievable set of files on just about everybody you can imagine in Washington that gave him incredible power. Because when somebody was kind of in his kitchen and he didn't like it, he would go to them and say, look, I've got this whole file of what, of your activities, of your misdeeds in terms of possible financial dealings that are not permitted, your personal lives. He basically started meticulously on all of his time and probably a lot of our taxpayer time, putting together these dossiers, these files on a variety of different powerful people in Washington. So he basically was doing that due to his own insecurity. He wanted to be bulletproof and really prevented from scrutiny and interference in his agency. And next thing you know, the FBI grew into this behemoth, gigantic expanding operation. And in that sense, you know, the fact that he was able to procure funding and support from Congress and from each succeeding president, and he sure saw a lot of them, starting with Calvin Coolidge all the way up to Richard Nixon in 1972. J. Edgar Hoover stayed in that job until he was 75 years old when he had a heart attack and passed away. So 37 years as director of the FBI, it was his stronghold. He was the powerhouse, and he took all the preventative measures to make sure that happened. Now, this guy, when he first came in as director, there were a few women on the staff. He fired each and every one of them, the ultimate elitist, the ultimate misogynist. He was not comfortable around African-Americans, had no blacks on his staff for the first 25 or 30 years with the FBI. The guy was just high and mighty, and he did not want to surround himself with anybody that he didn't directly identify with. And even those people were all subject to his temper tantrums and whims of deciding that they were worthless and he didn't want them around anymore. Reputed to be a guy that would just fire people on the spur of the moment. And back in those days, you didn't have all the union protection of government workers you have now, where, you know, a guy can basically be doing cocaine in the corner and threatening to burn down the building and you can't get rid of him. J. Edgar Hoover was not a very pleasant individual by all reports. And also some of his other things, the thing that put the FBI on the map, remember now, he took the job in 1935. The Great Depression on October 19th, 1929 had crashed the stock market. The country was in economic complete collapse when he assumed that position with the FBI. And one of the biggest problems in that era was dealing with the fact that you had a lot of criminal activity around the country, bank robberies, just these notorious villains, Bonnie and Clyde, Babyface Nelson, John Dillinger, Machine Gun Kelly, all of these different individuals that were public enemies number one. And that was another innovation that Hoover had. But there was an agent, a super agent for the FBI that was pretty much in charge of all that, named Melvin Purvis, who was a very accomplished lawman, very effective in capturing these notorious criminals. Famously, it was Purvis and his investigative team that cornered John Dillinger, the most notorious escaped from prison three different times, outlaw, after he attended a movie in Chicago at the Biograph Theater and walking out with two women, including a lady that had become an informant for the FBI because they threatened to deport her. She said she'd be wearing a red dress with a feathered hat. They spotted them. Dillinger had had a lot of facial surgeries and things to change his appearance, but the FBI chased him into an alley and shot him down. And it was Hoover the next morning who appeared before reporters in Washington saying, "We got him. We took him down. I spearheaded the investigation. I. Melvin Purvis was the guy. Hoover was an administrator sitting at a desk in Washington. He always passed himself off as this great law enforcement person. It was total BS. Of course, you can guess that Purvis didn't last much longer in the FBI. When he started getting the spotlight and he started getting the headlines, Hoover found that completely unacceptable. We moved into the late 1930s and early 1940s under the Hoover FBI administration. Organized crime, the mafia, Charles Lucky Luciano had organized the remnants of all of the crime families in New York and also enlisted people in Chicago and Buffalo and St. Louis and Los Angeles. We had a nationwide crime, organized crime syndicate where everyone worked in cooperation. If you had any problems with anybody else in a rival situation, you had to appear before what they called the commission to try to work out those differences. If anybody kind of stepped over the line, Luciano had really gotten it organized and hence organized crime. And J. Edgar Hoover just brushed it off for so many years. just denying the existence of any mafia or organized crime in the country, saying it's just a myth, it's not true, there is no organized crime, because for whatever reason, he did not want to investigate that. And historians are scratching their head as to, you know, this couldn't possibly be ignorance, because Hoover made it his business to know everything that was going on. But he basically just denied the existence of organized crime until an ill-fated meeting. I think it was in 1951 in upstate New York, where every major mafia figure came in to talk business at the home of a prominent mobster up in the upstate New York region, and a local policeman got suspicious because all these out of town, you know, fancy cars and all these strange people meticulously dressed had showed up in his small town. Anyway, he and his police force raided the mansion while the meeting was going on, and every major mafia figure in the country scattered in every direction, many of them running down hills and through woods in their $2,000 suits. And a lot of them were arrested, and in follow-up investigations, there was no denying anymore that this was highly organized, and Hoover finally had to concede. And this was many years removed. One other thing that Hoover was involved in, of course, in the 1940s was the proceeds of espionage and counterintelligence for World War II. And there was a lot of experts on board for that as well. Hoover, not expert in code breaking or, you know, basically counterintelligence measures. But the FBI, of course, if you look back, there's a lot of text that Hoover, and I'm not talking about text like we know, text is written work, where Hoover basically is taking credit for the FBI being the keys to America winning the World War II. But let me tell you a specific story real quick about a lady named Elizabeth Smith. Elizabeth Smith was born a Quaker in Pennsylvania, the youngest of 10 children, but she knew she had some exceptional abilities, and she was obsessed with literature and reading and studying a lot of the greats in that era of the literary world, and also the literary figures of the previous centuries. And Elizabeth Smith eventually left her family stronghold, where her only expectation from her father and her family was to marry and have children. Elizabeth Smith wanted a different life. And without getting into a lot of details, she actually completely by accident got involved in studying some text of some long ago writers, because the person hiring her was convinced there was a secret code contained in those works. And she actually did a good job of finding, to much to her surprise, that just with her own intellect and her own concentration, that she could actually do this kind of work. Long and short of the story, she winds up in Washington because she was pretty well revered for her ability to basically, just with paper, pencil, and just tons of perception, crack codes of enemy operatives. And in World War II, that was huge, because the Germans were using what was called the Enigma Code, which also was being broken by a gentleman named Turing over in England, breaking that code. The South American base of operations for the Germans also was sinking a lot of ships, had plans to sink the Queen Elizabeth, which was the premier cruise ship of the time. Anyway, Elizabeth Smith did unbelievably great work in breaking the South American German Enigma Code, and was rewarded by Hoover insisting that she sign a document that said she could never disclose her involvement in this because it's top secret, whatever government things. And so Elizabeth Smith basically helped win World War II and never got credit for it. Nobody's ever heard of her. In the meantime, all of her work, all of the documents that she basically created, all of the code-breaking procedures that she passed along, that she discovered, ended up in FBI files stamped FBI, you know, classified document, blah, blah, blah. So basically, Hoover just shoved her out of the way and took it and gave his agency and bureau credit. She didn't even work for the FBI. She was actually working for the Department of the Navy at that time. But it's just another indication of just what a vile guy this was, and just a complete opportunist elitist who kept hold of his power. In the later years, real quick, because we're running short on time, and I had a lot more to get to, and maybe we'll do part two of this next week. But the bottom line is the FBI, and let me say this, I don't want to discredit any of the efforts. I have met some FBI folks. I have found them to be incredibly intelligent and hardworking and diligent and certainly stick to the task of what their assignment is. And that is to make everything in our country safe and legal and secure for all of us. So this is not an attack on rank and file FBI agents, but this is just giving you a blueprint of the FBI that we see now, the FBI that has been involved in censorship of American citizens, who has been involved in interacting directly with tech companies to suppress information that you can see online, an FBI that had the Hunter Biden computer since 2019 and knew exactly what was on there, but commissioned 51 former U.S. intelligence people to sign a letter that's saying the computer is likely Russian disinformation, when they knew damn well it was not. It was absolutely authentic, which has come out now and has been certified by everybody in the government. An FBI that sends agents and investigates parents that are going to school board meetings and are upset about their children being indoctrinated, being exposed to sexually explicit material as young children, being taught that America is an evil place and that they should be ashamed for their ethnic inclination. An FBI that kicked in the door of Mark Houck, a father of seven small children, and took him away in full riot gear into a car, over 20 agents on an early morning school day when everybody was scurrying around the house getting ready for a normal day. They kick in Mark Houck's door and take him away. And what was his transgression? A year and a half before, he and eight other people had stood outside an abortion clinic in Cincinnati and sang hymns and said prayers for the unborn that were being eliminated inside that facility. And there's some ridiculous law that was passed by Congress in recent years that restricts the admission, which prohibits the restriction of admission to these facilities by people. So they allege they were blocking people and discouraging people from going into that clinic by their presence. And the implications of that, they weren't armed. They weren't violent. A lot of them were 60 years old plus. Mark Houck is in his 40s. Bottom line is they take him away in cuffs and irons and this giant public spectacle because he was made an example of that. We're not going to tolerate this anti-abortion stuff. The FBI is politicized and it's a shame. And all the great agents and people that they have in the rank and file that still do great work every day, I salute you. This is not an attack on any of those people, but it is the same. It's the reason that our founders did not create a federal police force early on. James Madison, one of the main framers, was outspoken on the pitfalls of doing such a thing, because if it ever becomes politicized, which it has now, it's highly politicized from the leadership standpoint. They have meticulously, since the Obama administration, been putting people in place there that you know, make that organization a tool for whoever's sitting in the administrative branch of the government, the president, to use at his discretion to further their political agenda. That is not the purpose of the FBI. It's really sad what's happened. It's so true of so many of the organizations, the bureaus, the agencies and departments of our federal government. The politicization of these is not at for the benefit of the American people. The final points on Hoover, because I make that case, because Hoover, this is not a recent phenomenon. Hoover had extensive files on Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy, and threatened both of them in the early 60s when they were prominent, and really kept them in check in terms of. Of course, JFK wanted to remove Hoover, but he certainly, John F. Kennedy had plenty on him that Hoover had collected. So he really had his hands tied. And Martin Luther King was absolutely despised by Hoover, who thought he was just a troublemaker and a communist and any long list of things. Also, was doing an investigation during the March on Washington where the I Have a Dream speech was made, probably the most significant speech arguably in American history. But he was investigating King, following him around, and was trying to tell the presidential administration that King was doing all kinds of nefarious things in Washington. Whether or not that's true, again, what people do on their personal time, if it doesn't harm others, that's not my business. But that's just the kind of evil little, paranoid guy this was. In the 1964 church bombing here in Birmingham, the murders in Mississippi of civil rights people, Hoover did not even pursue very much, if at all, any kind of resolutions to those cases. So the seeds of what we see today in the FBI were planted by the original director, which this pattern of leadership that is really misguided is something that's not a new phenomenon. It was set in place by the director for 37 years until the day he died of the FBI, who had become the most powerful person in America and American government. And for all the different things we know about J. Edgar Hoover, that is a most distressing fact. That the building now that houses the FBI that carries his name was led by somebody that had a lot of these habits, and it really set the stage for what we're dealing with now. Donald Trump said in his previous presidential campaign, it was just a slogan, we need to go and drain the swamp. The swamp is deep. The swamp is dangerous. The swamp is against you and I, the American people. They are for themselves. They are for their massive power, their unlimited spending capacity, and their lavish lifestyles that makes them millionaires. It's the government against the people, and it's what all of our forefathers feared. The FBI is just a prime example of what happens when you federalize things and you allow people into those positions that do not have the welfare of the American people in mind. They have their own welfare and their own agenda in mind. And it's really a sad thing to behold. That's what I thought you needed to know this week. Check out the FBI television series. I think they're on Tuesday nights on CBS. I'm not real high on the dramatic ones, the international and the most wanted. All of the FBI agents are real hip now. The FBI agents that I've encountered in my career are buttoned down and meticulously dressed and very all business. This is like a depiction of a modern day Miami Vice on the international one, especially. They're just super cool, and they've got all these personal issues and everything else. It's not the FBI. Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., Special Agent Lou Erskine, would be shocked today to see the actual depictions of the FBI. I don't think they're very accurate. I don't think those shows are very good. FBI True is worth watching, so give it a look if you ever get the opportunity. I'm Kip Kiefer. That's what you need to know. Join Tony Curry and I this week for Kiefer and Curry. We'll be talking about a subject of interest and having a great conversation like we always do. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great week, and we will see you again this same time next week here on TKR.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.